Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today we discuss the psychology of the internet, and with us is psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz and psychiatrist Mark Willey. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning.
So the internet has had an enormous impact on our lives, and in particular, the younger generation who don't know a world without it.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, we think about, we remember that. We remember, you know, party lines and phones and no answering machines and like
right.
hardly any technology at all. And now we've got so much of it.
Yep.
You know, so I guess when we think about it, we could probably survive without all this technology. But ask somebody under 20, they can't even imagine it, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, we know what it's like to survive without it. They don't.
They don't, yeah. right.
Yeah. The distinction that I've heard made that I kind of like is digital immigrants, which we all are in this room, versus digital natives, who are people who grew up with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they can be, that's exactly what they are. They're natives. It's part of their life. And what amazes me is how easily kids, even young kids, when they're beginning to speak, really, can take to the technology and operate it in a way that is very entertaining and engrossing for them. It's in some ways, it's a better babysitter than TV is, because it is so immediately interactive and satisfying to sort of, with your fingers, control your environment.
Yeah. It's amazing how it just seems so instinctual to them, too, where,
right.
you know, here you think, you know, my grandson's four, and he'll say, no, it's not, and he'll, you know, correct me, and he's right and I'm wrong. Yeah. So it's really surprising. I love, Mark, you sent some background info, and I love this, I highlighted this quote, "The internet is neither inherently good nor bad. Instead, it is best described as inherently powerful." That seems to be a really true statement.
I think so, yes, because we'll get into some of the good, the bad,
and the ugly.
Right. But it certainly is powerful. It has a big influence. You know, our lives, in our future lives, are just not going to be the same as a result.
Yeah. So if you aren't on board, I bet you better get on board, I guess, right? There's this kind of pressure, though, that comes with technology. It's a 24/7 world, right? I mean, you can get, remember, you used to have to wait till 6 o'clock to hear the news, and, you know, you had the morning paper and the afternoon paper and then the 6 o'clock news. Now it's pretty much any time of the day. So there's this pressure to kind of keep up with what's going on, not only with young people, but I think even with adults. You know, you're thinking, you know, you got, what am I missing, right? What am I missing?
Exactly.
I'm not online, you know. So let's talk a little bit about that pressure, and especially for younger people who I think, and there are some adults too, who just cannot put away, you know, their phones or laptops or iPads or what have you. But for teenagers especially, they're sleeping with this stuff. I mean, they really feel like if they don't have their phone, mostly their phone with them all the time, they're missing out. And it's not just they're missing out, they probably would be, their friends would be like, well, where were you, right? Why didn't you answer?
Yeah, exactly.
2 o'clock in the morning on a school night. Yeah.
Right.
And people go through stages too. I know 10 years ago my wife and I would have to coerce our children into leaving their phones aside when it's time to sit down for dinner. And now my three daughters, who are all in their 20s, are cajoling my wife and me to put our phone aside. That they're actually have gotten better at putting their phone aside.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
So, you know, it evolves for all of us.
Yeah.
Sure. No, it varies, but it's just so engaging to be able to be engaged immediately whenever you have an impulse or it's even a slight impulse. Whereas it's almost like you're deluding yourself that there's no such thing as loneliness.
Or boredom. Mm-hmm.
Right. You can occupy your time. You don't have to, you know, waiting in line at the supermarket or something like that.
Right.
You can be occupied without having to kind of stare around and feel silly.
And virtually no question, at least informational or factual, has to go unanswered anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to argue with anybody about what happened when, because you can pick up your phone and find out.
Or who was the actor in that movie. Yeah. Well, and remember, before the internet was that young people would go home and look at it up in our encyclopedias, or you'd go to the library. Right. I mean, you're doing research, you'd go to the library, and right. I mean, luckily,
the cards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now it's just there. But there's the other danger. It's there at the touch of your fingertips, but is it accurate, right? Because everything you see on the internet isn't necessarily true.
Not at all.
Right.
Not at all. No.
Yeah.
No,
and sometimes I feel like it can be overwhelming. I remember I thought I had a spider bite, and my doctor said, no, you know, this is shingles. And so he kind of had his hands over some pictures and showed me one, and he said, okay. And he said, now, when you go home, I don't want you to go on the internet. Do not go on the internet. And that's true. When you think you know, whatever you think you might have, and you start looking it up, and then you start looking at all the things people say about it, you can, you know, really get yourself all worked up for maybe nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, before we would rely on authorities, and we could trust media, I think, or at least trust the news, for instance, the news media. But now there's so anybody can be a newsman, really, if they get there, if they scream loud enough or get enough attention, they can create all sorts of havoc. So it's hard to know what you're reading, how true it is. You know, for instance, I shop a lot on Amazon, and I use the reviews a lot to make a decision, but I don't know how real they are and how kind of purchased they are, because I have bought things and the company has then said, give us a positive review and we'll give you a $5 credit. That's tempting.
You know, here's how weird it's getting. Shankar Vedantam, on a recent edition of Hidden Brain, does a show on the use of synthetic voices to essentially do the auditory equivalent of photoshopping to imitate or recreate the voice of known people like Obama or Trump or whoever to say whatever it is that you want them to say.
Exactly.
And he plays on the show some bits. I mean, it's just really, we're on the verge of unbelievable.
Yeah,
he's on the radio, and you can do it video, too.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Same thing can happen. They can do it live shots. I was at a conference a few years back where they were showing how you can literally take things out or add things into what seems like a video live shot, you know? It's really, you really have to do your research now to check your fact-checking, which is getting harder and harder to do, isn't it?
I don't think there's any foolproof way of knowing whether a video was shopped, you know, or was designed or not.
Yeah.
You mentioned that we'd be talking about virtual reality, you know, earlier in the day. And I was thinking about that. I don't know what's virtual. I mean, I don't even, virtual versus what? I mean, fake news versus real news. I mean, how do you even tell anymore?
I was going to say, it almost reminds you of, you remember in Star Trek in the series, the holograms, you could go in and create this whole world. It's like, we're there.
Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. We'd love to hear from you this morning. Are you plugged in? Are you in Facebook? And if you're not, why not? 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So let's talk about Facebook for a minute. Facebook kind of, you know, well, I mean, there's a whole lot of people. I think Facebook has become where it started out with the younger set. It's now more our age, you know, middle age and up, because we can stay in contact with family and friends who we've lost touch with. And the kids are now on more things like Snapchat and Instagram, which I don't know a lot about. So, you know, if anybody wants to chime in on that. this can be addicting, right? I mean, you know, especially if you're kind of isolated and living alone, and you can be in all kinds of groups, which could be a good thing. You know, you're identifying, maybe you're into astrology and you find a group and you can do that. But it could also can even make you feel a little more isolated when you're looking at all these fabulous lives that everyone is leading, because not everybody posts the bad things that are happening. You know, they're when they're on vacation, it's fabulous, even if they're not having a fabulous time.
No. That's what it's all about. It's about getting attention for yourself. And that's the method of changing, of exchange, really, is how much attention you're getting. And it's always positive, because you're trying to improve your standing, your social standing, which is really inherent in all of us. It's part of our biology to stand out socially, because then you're safe, and then you're definitely going to be included as opposed to rejected. The more attention you can get to yourself, the better. And it's, you don't want negative attention. Although there are people on the internet that do want negative attention. Mm-hmm. Those are the trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you want to get positive attention for yourself. And the problem is that everybody compares.
Mm-hmm.
From the research, it looks like the more time you spend on Facebook, the high users, this is, several hours a day, every day, always checking in, they run a risk of being depressed.
Not surprising. No. I mean, if you're looking around and saying everybody looks fabulous and is having a great time and you're having a bad day,
right?
What's wrong with me, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You can see where that happens.
So something's bad, wrong, faulty about me.
Yeah.
That I can't get there.
For some odd reason, it seems as if it's human nature for us to compare ourselves in general to those who have more, not to those who have the same or less.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which, again, if you don't mind me referring yet again to Hidden Brain,
fabulous. You can refer to him all you like.
Yeah,
the subject of a recent show, the title of Why Is It That No One Feels Rich?
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews on that podcast, an author who's studied this at great length. And it's because we do, by our nature, tend to compare ourselves to those who have more.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, why would that, there must be, you like to think about evolution, Dr. Whaley. Maybe you can explain what is the evolutionary benefit? How is this a survival of the fittest to always be comparing ourselves to those who have more?
Well, I would think it is explained by evolution. In the sense that the more you have, the more power you have. The more power you have, the less likely you are to be subject to the whims of another or the whims of random fate also. So there's a drive to be on top and competition.
To improve and to expand and to have more and to be more.
Exactly. Right. Then if you have more, you be more, you have more resources.
It's not very Buddhist,
No, not at all.
No, it's exactly opposite.
Let's talk to Barbara, who's giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Mindy, and your wonderful team. I'm on a cell phone. Can you hear me clearly enough?
We can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay. I have very low ability to hear you, but I've just been listening on the radio and on my cell phone. I am a massive fan of these guys and you and the conversations you have, number one. Number two, I'm 72 years old last week. Number three, I have four grandchildren here in Oak Bluffs. I just dropped three of them off at day camp. It's a day camp. It's an art-based day camp that they've gone to for a couple of years. And at this art-based day camp, they're teaching them video animation and claymation. I know you guys know that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing these just amazing things there. The point I next want to get to is something called YouTube. Okay, so I am a believer that YouTube was created by God, but it has its upsides and its downsides. Excuse the truck in the background driving by. So last night I was watching YouTube. My 10 and 8-year-old grandchildren were watching YouTube, and the counselor at the art camp was watching YouTube, although we were all watching different things. I have been studying the evobio, the evolutionary biology substrate of all that we're tackling that you guys are so brilliantly articulating, all right? And I just want to go one step further before I hang up, which is that this thing is happening at a synaptic level, okay? I contend that there is a serotonin or dopamine hit associated with this extraordinary level of control that the technology gives us, in addition to everything you guys just said, which is all absolutely true. So I just want to move it from add the neurobiology of attention to the evolutionary biology of where this is all coming from our lower brain, and get this communication over to people. This is crucial. Mm-hmm. All right? And if you guys have a connection to Frontline at PBS, this is the topic of the day.
Yeah.
All right?
Barbara's very enthusiastic about this. All right. So, Barbara, Dr. Whaley was nodding his head as you were saying that. She's onto something, right?
Yes, especially the word control. Mm-hmm. I think that is key. We were talking about what's the advantage of being rich. We're comparing ourselves to rich people. It has to do with control. Everybody wants to be able to control their fate so that they aren't snuffed out. Mm-hmm. They aren't damaged. They aren't hurt. They aren't vulnerable. The hit, the dopamine hit, HIT, the internet and the amount of control you have of getting what you want immediately is very pleasurable.
Yeah. And this it can be addictive. I mean, you know, we hear about people who are addicted to gaming or addicted to, you know, their Facebook page. So there can be an addictive quality to this, right?
Absolutely. And the people that use it a lot, for instance, Facebook users, they will, if you deprive them of it, they go through typical withdrawal symptoms that a drug addict or a alcoholic will go when they're first separated from their substance. Hmm. Namely, they think about it a lot. They have urges. They feel uncomfortable, act physiologically uncomfortable, restless, irritable. All those are very consistent with substance withdrawal syndrome. So and, you know, same circuits are involved.
Yeah, and Barbara hit on something else, is the speed at which this is happening. And we think about it. I mean, this is, Google came on, 1997, 1998. And in the beginning, I don't think we really knew exactly what to do with it. But now it's an actual verb, right? We Googled it, you know? It's happened quickly. And the advances just keep coming and coming and coming. It seems like for those of us, as you were saying, the digital immigrants, we're like, whoa, we wish we could slow it down just a tad because we're still catching up with the you know, beginnings. But the speed, that also makes it tough and confusing for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
The single most addictive phenomenon that I have seen in my clinical practice is video games played by kids online with people in cyberspace. Mm-hmm. And which can, so that you have video games themselves, which are, you know, potentially addictive and can lead to all kinds of trouble. But it also creates an entire world of quote-unquote friendships with people that, of course, you've never met in real life,
right,
who are all across the globe. And I see and meet with parents whose children are spending as much time as they are permitted to playing video games.
Right.
And when the parents attempt to limit this, I mean, there is hell to pay. Mm-hmm. It is a very, very tough problem.
Yeah.
I would rather be confronted with how to treat an opiate addiction than a video game addiction.
Really?
Because I think that the way that one can treat an opiate addiction is somehow more apparent to me it's painful.
I'm thinking of one patient I had that his whole life was just doing these war games online for certain hours a day, you know, probably 8-10 hours a day, he would be very depressed if he was left out of a plan, you know, they plan some kind of attack. He really was suicidally depressed.
So you couldn't say it's only a game, because to him, it was not just
no,
a game.
No, it was his life.
Yeah.
Not surprising, he didn't have much else in his life.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it gave him a real social interaction and connection. Helped with loneliness, whereas otherwise he was pretty damaged from trauma, certainly. On the other hand, he repeated acted out again his damage or his pain in it.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626 if you'd like to share your thoughts on technology and the internet with us. Or I'd love to know, if you're not on Facebook, why? If you're of our generation. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the psychology of the internet with psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Love to hear your thoughts on how technology is impacting your lives. You know, you mentioned the gaming, and, you know, it got me to thinking of, there's a lot of grandparents who are raising kids now, their grandchildren, and of course there are parents. And this, you know, when you Mark, you mentioned how young kids seem to just gravitate and, you know, be really good at it early. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of confusion as to how much we allow and when and what. You know, you're talking about the video gaming and how a terrible addiction that can be if you let kids get too far down the road. I mean, you know, once you let Pandora out of the box, you're not getting her back in. So what are your thoughts on the impact of all this on the developing brain?
Well, it's got effects, and there have been some fMRI studies that show some changes. I don't know how consistent and diagnostic, quote-unquote, they are. But it's an interaction with immediate results, and you don't really get that in other activities, say, that kids do, like playing ball or running or playing tag or, you know, playing some makeup game. It's a unique experience in terms of human evolution, certainly. Mm-hmm. The outcome is not yet known. I don't think. We're on uncharted territory.
Yeah.
It may be helpful to a child's developing brain. And on the other hand, I'm sure with some people, when they get too much too early, like anything, it sets them at a high risk for some kind of deviant behavior or dysfunction later on.
I certainly think that the interaction or the interface between ADHD and video gaming is really interesting. There have been some papers that conclude that you can actually cause ADHD to happen through video gaming, you know, extensive video gaming. What I would say is, in my own practice, is that it seems to me that it certainly worsens. You see, video gaming actually caters to people with ADHD,
right?
Because the multitasking and the constant stimulation. People with ADHD love, you know, intense stimulation, love to be doing something that really demands your constant attention.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if you're not constantly paying attention when you're playing a video game, you're going to lose pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So whether it worsens it, whether it can actually cause it to happen, but again, what I have seen is the addictive potency is really quite remarkable. I'd love to hear from parents who may be listening who have found some strategies that they've employed successfully to limit their kids' use of video games without their kids just becoming completely psychotic.
Yeah, I guess, you know, some parents use, you know, you have X amount of hours this week, and you can, you know, have an hour this day or half hour, you know, you can, depending again on the age of the child, because, you know, like a kid who's four doesn't understand what an hour really, really means. But I also was thinking, as you were talking about playing ball and some of the things, my grandson sometimes, he doesn't do them a lot, but he sometimes does puzzles online, which is great shapes, but it's not the same thing as picking up that puzzle piece, which he also does, and putting it in the puzzle.
Right.
So even though some of these, you know, so-called educational programs can seem really great, they don't really take the place. I mean, you're not having those fine motor skills with the online puzzle, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but then I would imagine for some kids who might have some sort of deficit in that area, maybe that would be helpful for them to at least, you know, be, I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, just one more dimension to the ADHD story. I've heard of, and I'm not up on this, but I think there's some programs designed to treat ADHD. Getting the attention and keeping it and at least giving the user some tools to deal with their wandering mind and their dysfunction in some positive ways. I'm not up on it to tell you the results, but I know it exists.
Yeah. So none of us in this room tweet, right?
Yeah, we're not
tweeting. I think I have tweeted twice since it existed.
I think I'm about something like that as well. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. If you don't tweet or have Facebook or any of this technology, I have some friends who actually don't do Facebook or Instagram or tweet, and they're perfectly happy.
You sure? That. Are you sure they're
happy? They say they are. But going back to that Facebook question for a minute, a 2011 study showed that the more time teenage girls spend on Facebook, the higher their risk of developing negative body images and eating disorders. I did not find that surprising. When you think about, you think about all the photoshopping and thing that goes on. I have a friend who has a niece who's always been quite overweight, and I was looking at her Facebook page, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, she looks fantastic!" And I was saying to my friend, "That's great." She goes, "Oh no, that's all photoshopped." And you would, you would never. I mean, I don't know how you do that, but they, I think I mentioned this before. The preteens who stick their knees inside their shirt so it looks like they have this cleavage, and and what's with the bathroom mirror shots? I mean, the boys and girls both do that, shot in the bathroom mirror. But you can see where, again, we come back to that comparison, but as, teenagers who really want to fit in, this could be a real problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it does damage, real damage. And because of that comparison, and again, the need to be on top, the need to have positive attention, to be recognized, and not be seen as individual, invisible, is part of it. Then the other parts have to do with, tribal instincts, in terms of finding people that are of like mind, and then you have a in and out group, and you're part of an in group. So it's high school all over again.
Yeah, and of course the bullying. We had bullying when we were in school as well, but you went home and it was over, right? You might have it at school, or you might have it on the playground, it wasn't 24/7 like it can be now. And boy, it can get really nasty. I mean, scary so.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there have been suicides.
Yes, absolutely.
I wonder if either of you have seen the movie Eighth Grade, which is a wonderful depiction of an eighth grade girl who has really awful anxiety and quite poor self-esteem. But she does these online videos in which she gives people advice on how to succeed and how to be positive. And she's, all filled with very positive advice for people. It's a wonderful depiction. Mm-hmm. I recommend it to people who are interested in that age group.
Another aspect I wanted to point out is how the use of Facebook can really feed into negativity in relationships. I have one extreme example that I'm working with now, but that actually led to a killing.
Oh, wow.
And what happens is people in an intimate relationship will start paying attention to somebody else, liking somebody else. And maybe if they get to the point where they might defriend somebody, that's a real insult and a real hurt. And divorces have happened. And if you... and there's a phenomenon of kind of following your partner's Facebook activities.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're talking a lot of negatives here on Facebook. Facebook can have some positive outcomes too, though, as we were mentioning. So it's, as we said, it's not all good or all bad.
Oh, but it is powerful.
But it is powerful. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to a Winky who's calling from Nantucket. Good morning, Winky.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. And I just want to say that I think... there's too much information for the brain to absorb in Facebook, and I don't need to know if someone I knew 30 years ago has a grandson. No, it's just too much information, and it's totally unnecessary. And I would like to listen to things that are more aren't so extraneous.
Yeah,
actually.
You bring up a good point. Yeah, it's too much. It's like information overload. And do you care what somebody had for dinner, right? unless they're giving you the recipe too.
Well, you know, you hear people on the telephone in the airport talking on their phone saying, well, I'm going to have a McDonald's and then I'm going to the bathroom and then I'm going to go to the gate. Who cares? You know, what's that all about?
Yeah, you're pointing out that it's just irritating to see people so self-centered,
yeah.
And so much calling attention to themselves over ridiculous things.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that. Appreciate your call. And, you know, sometimes this is what annoys me is when somebody posts, I feel betrayed. Don't ask. Or I'm having tragedy struck again. I don't want to talk about it. Oh, then why did you put it up there, right? Because you know you got all of us are curious. What's going on, right? Yeah. I can't quite understand the motivation why people do that.
Well, you know, I'm afraid there's a bit of Kardashian in all of us.
Oh my.
Really. That desire to be watched and noticed, even when it's for nothing.
Yeah. I don't understand that whole Kardashian phenomenon. Let me tell you, I don't get it at all.
Well, I think Winky's response to all of this, who cares, is very frequently precisely what I feel when somebody posts where they had dinner last night.
That's right.
Which is a very common thing for people to do on social media, whether it's Instagram.
I do like if it's a review, because then you go, hey, I was thinking about eating there. And, you know, when some people are talking about a new restaurant in town or something.
Information.
So that's information, right.
That's different.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Janet, who's giving us a call from West Tisbury. Hi, Janet.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm one of those people that I don't do all of this, and I made up my mind. It's not that I'm unaware of what goes on, but I made up my mind that I did not want to live that way. So I don't have the internet. I don't have cell phones. I don't have Alexia and all of that junk.
Yeah.
What I did want to say that I listened to your station and WBUR in Boston. Mm-hmm. I don't remember which station it was on, but they've done brain scans on people that do the video games and the internet. And the same areas show up as would somebody that was on heroin or whatever. So it is addictive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my life, I enjoy my life, and I've watched some of my friends go through this, and I really don't want to live that way. I read books. I have a horse, and I spend time outside and go gardening.
Yeah. Well, Janet, and you know, when I saw your name up there, Janet, I thought I knew what you were going to say, because I went, this is a busy lady. Janet calls in quite a bit, talks about her horse and her gardening and all the things she's doing. So you don't have time.
Well, I don't want to live that way. Yeah. And I think it's doing something to the country and the world, in fact. This is not a good thing. It's like anything else. It's misused.
Yes.
And that data collection is bad, too.
Yeah.
And if you don't turn Alexia off, they're listening to your conversations.
Right. Well, Janet.
The children are interacting with Alexia.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Janet. We appreciate that.
She's pointing out something that I think we do need to pay attention to or take up, at least. And that is how powerful three companies are on the internet. That's Google, Twitter, and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They all have the same business model. We think that we're users on their platform. We're not. We're products.
Oh, they're using us. Yeah.
They're using us. We are their products. The real client is the advertisers who pay them money.
Yeah.
So we're giving them free information, which their algorithms take into account, mish and match in all sorts of ways, and feed it back to us through advertising. That's going to be more effective than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, you know, I that whole thing she's talking about Alexa listening. I wonder about that. How much myself? Because you'll say something like, "I need a new pair of shoes," and all of a sudden, all these shoes are showing up on my feet. Right? I was like, "How do I know that? Are they reading my mind?"
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Sure. Let's talk to Brian, who's calling from Brewster. Hi, Brian.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. I dared to call today because my three daughters are in Sweden and I'm here in the U.S. on my own. And be very sensitive if I call their Swedish radio because they would hear it. And we've had a very, 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 very complicated situations with my daughters and myself being in what you were just talking about. I'm half American and half Swedish, by the way, if you wonder about the accent. But I've been in the advertising business and I've been in the music industry working with social media and working with the value of your like button and how important it is to us as advertisers. At the same time, parallel, one of my daughters is getting so bullied, goes so far that she is still now at the age of 22 in a very, very bad state. And more or less in suicidal position. And it's all down to that the social media is almost like a schoolyard with no parents and no teachers, and the bullying can go on without anybody knowing.
Right.
And me, living in Stockholm, thinking I'm on top of it, I'm a young father, I know exactly what's happening with my kids. It turns out that they made a web page of my daughter. They bullied her from morning to evening on the social media. We had no idea. She was under her blanket looking at her phone. We were thinking she was just fine. She was looking at what her friends were doing. And it went that far that she actually started hurting herself, cutting herself. Mm. And this has gone so far that even myself, which is ironic, being in the advertising business for so many years and turning from the ads in the paper to hooking up with what we call influencers on the social media and how important they are. It's enough if they say they like one place, and that could mean if they survive as a business or not. Mm-hmm. But I've seen in the U.S., though, I don't see as many young kids being on their iPhones as I actually do in Europe.
Hmm.
It is much, much more out there. The kids at the age of 4 or 5 already has an iPhone. They already have an Instagram.
Wow.
And the problem is that I know for a fact that Instagram and Facebook, they hold on to the likes. They don't even put out the full amount of likes you might get in a picture, because then they know you're not going to go back.
Mm.
So they portion it out every 10, 15, 20 minutes so that you will keep looking and keep getting that serotonin feeling that, oh, somebody liked me or somebody liked that. My youngest daughter, who says she's aware of her sister, what happened, she says to herself, Dad, I can't even stop. It's like a drug. It's really
well, it goes back to
cocaine.
Yeah, your addictive, the addictive aspect of that. Yeah, Brian, thanks for sharing that with us. But you mentioned that about phones. I have to read this note from Jenny. She said, recently at a gathering, our host passed around a basket, and anyone who liked could put their phone in it. Most of the adults did so. Then we offered the basket to the teens, and they all put their phones in the basket. So easy. We had fun. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the psychology of the internet with psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So as Brian was pointing out, that advertisers partially parse out the likes.
The likes,
what
yeah, it's
that
very
mean?
Interesting. They're capitalizing on something that psychologists have known about, behavioral psychologists, and that is intermittent reward means that the person is more likely to engage in the behavior to try to get the reward. In other words, if it's intermittent and unpredictable, because if they get the reward all the time for the same behavior, they get bored. But if it's intermittent, then they'll keep at it. And that's it's, you know, just another feature of addiction that gives you that shot of dopamine when you do get the reward. So they're playing you. the logarithm is really playing with you manipulate you and keep you engaged.
Yeah. Christine is giving us a call. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. I'm calling as a parent who, I don't want to say struggled, because I was just strict. I was not going to let my sons have these smartphones. And it's the best thing I've ever done. We have technology in the home. We have a computer. It lives in the kitchen where they do their homework. It's not in their bedroom. My son commutes from the island to go to school in Falmouth. He's got a flip phone, which if anyone's tried to text on a flip phone, you know, forget it. But he's probably one of the few kids who knows how to dial a phone and call someone and not press, a contact. And I've made that because he often forgets his phone and will have to use someone else's phone to call home and say if he's late or whatnot. But we have avoided so much drama. There's even been meetings at school, and they'll give me a call and say, oh, you don't have to come because your kid wasn't involved in these horrible bullying texts or whatnot.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I'll go to school meetings you know, my sons went to two different schools, but the parents are the ones who want the kids to have the phones. They want to get in touch with them. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that at all. I feel like the grown-ups have let the kids have this, you know, I don't know
yeah.
what.
Power.
This power, and they've left the room. It's like mm-hmm. the babysitter or the people who hand their phone to the toddlers. It makes me crazy. So mm-hmm. now when we go out as a family, well, we don't bring our, I make everyone leave it in the car, mm-hmm. but with my husband, so that he can disconnect from work. Mm-hmm. But also we sit and look around us and no one's talking anymore.
Right.
They're all looking at their smartphones.
Yeah.
Or you look at a cute couple, they're not even talking
yeah.
to each other.
So you leave your husband and the phones in the car?
No, he gets to come in. Christine, I think that's a really good point that you bring up. And I love that idea of, you know, it's sort
it's
of like
saying no. It's
yeah,
parenting.
Your idea. It's like your idea of leaving the phones not at the dinner table. So in leaving the phones in the car, you kind of are. You might be tempted to look at that phone, but you can't because it's in the car. So you have no conversation.
Right.
You have to talk at the.
Yeah. And when you're all together, do you need to contact anybody else? Because I thought we were going out to dinner.
Yeah.
The flip phone is a great idea.
Yeah.
It really is a great idea because a lot of parents will very legitimately and understandably say, I need for my kid to be able to get in touch with me and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that's why they have a phone. But it's really the smartphone that's not so smart.
Right.
A flip phone avoids that problem.
And those kids will figure out things that smartphone can do that you didn't know it could do.
I'll mention a fact that actually reinforces this woman's approach. In Silicon Valley, one of the kind of private schools that really thrive and seem to be growing are the Waldorf schools.
Oh, right.
And that's because they don't use technology.
Yeah.
Everything is hands-on and technology is just not a central feature. The people there that are living this world send their kids intentionally there
because
of this.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. interesting. And I like the idea she mentioned of having the computer in the kitchen or in like mm-hmm. a you know family room or somewhere where you can walk by and you can see what your kids are doing. And mm-hmm. that's a really smart idea as well.
Yeah.
All right, I want to touch on the psychology of the trolls for a moment. So, mm-hmm. you know, you get these trolls and you think, they're so mean and, you know, what's the point? Are they doing it to entertain themselves? Are they just mean people? What's going on there?
It's both.
Both, yeah.
Actually, it's for them, it's entertainment because they can provoke a response. They get attention. It's negative attention, necessarily. When it's been studied, they study the kinds of personality traits that these individuals have, and it turns out that they are very high in what's called the personality dark triad, which consists of psychopathy, in other words, sociopathy, Machiavellianism, and sadism, mm-hmm. And add in narcissism too. That's the kind of people that they are. And they also tend to be extroverts, although they have these disagreeable traits.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly prodding, provoking, upset in mm-hmm. others. I wonder sometimes about Trump in this regard, but that's who they are, mm-hmm. And that's why they're doing it. Then you have the other, this is related to the trolls, is the Russians. What the Russians are doing with our internet attention, especially around political political things.
So complicated,
isn't it?
Yeah. We have an email from Aaron who says, I can tell you that as a website coordinator for a school district, there are many people who are not comfortable on Facebook because of the exposure they would experience professionally and personally. And she gives some examples. And she writes, Twitter and Instagram are different. With a separate professional and personal account, folks can curate content to fit professional objectives and personal preferences. Thanks for pointing that out. And, you know, aren't you so glad that we didn't have this when we were growing up? You know, as kids, we do silly things. And I mean, now you have to, this can haunt you forever,
right?
And it can go, you know, some little local thing can go completely viral.
I never would have gotten into medical school.
If they really do.
Right, let's talk to Barbara calling from Nantucket. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. First, thank you for having this conversation. It's terrific. Two quick things. I'm not on Facebook because I'd rather have personal conversations, although I am texting as my personal conversations these days with somebody if I want to tell them something. I teach at NYU at the business school, and a little thing that I've done is I've required students as an assignment to leave their phones, walk around the block, and then reflect on what did they feel, see, talk to somebody, observe, and it's really interesting. At first it was optional, and I had students say, no, make us do it. And it's amazing sort of that whole thing, and it's not a long time. They only have 10 minutes when they're away from the phone, and also no phones in class.
No phones in class.
Yeah, that's great.
You're giving them an exercise to be mindful.
Yeah.
And so what do you typically hear people say that they've observed and felt during that walk?
That they saw buildings that they hadn't seen. They saw people having, well, people are not having conversations. They're each on their phone. The other people are having them on the phone. They might have talked to a food truck vendor. Just the variety of life down on West 4th Street. So I tell them, well, you know, you can do it yourself whenever you want, but it's addictive. I know how addictive it is, and I didn't grow up on it. So.
The other thing that
thank you,
yeah, Barbara, thank thanks you. For the call.
The other thing that she points out that we haven't discussed is a lot of this activity online is mindless. You do it automatic without it's a reflex kind of interaction, as opposed to thoughtful interaction or mindful interaction. She's developed this exercise to get the people to be mindful and to take in their environment, as opposed to focus it so narrowly on the several inches in their hand.
So what she's also pointing out is that when you're walking down the street and you're on your phone, whether you're talking on your phone or you're looking at something, you're actually not here. It may be you're now, but you're not here.
That's right.
That's a plug for the show Here and Now. But you're not. And so when you're walking down the street in New York City, which God knows is a very rich tapestry of life, and you're not on your phone, you actually are here. So you actually see the food truck. You see the buildings. You probably even smell the food in the food truck better than you do if you're talking on your phone. I know that when we're driving in an unfamiliar area, and again, when our kids are in the car and we're driving through, you know, beautiful scenery, I'll say put your phones down because you're not looking at what's around
you. And all of this makes you wonder where we're headed. You know, they think of artificial intelligence, which, you know, can be mistaken for human interaction now. I mean, again, this technology is moving so quickly that, you know, where are we going? Who knows, right? Who knows what's coming up next? But just going back in the last minute or so that we have, back to some thoughts on kids, I guess what we would say is, because it's sort of uncharted territory, is introduce them slowly, right? And you know, limited? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, moderately limited. And if you have to set limits by controlling the Wi-Fi in your house, you can do that. There's technology to do that.
I love the idea of using the flip phone as a way of being able to communicate, but without prematurely giving your child the use of the internet 24/7.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
And I guess having those conversations with your kids, right, about, you know, what the limitations are and why. Just like you do with anything else.
Exactly. It's a challenge.
Final thoughts?
I would say, just to repeat, the internet is neither good nor bad, but it is powerful.
And
keep
that
in mind.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and, you know, I think parents should not be shy about insisting on having the right to know what their kids are looking at and who they're talking to. And despite, you know, your child's insistence on having that privacy, even at a very early age, as a parent, that's really not in their best interest.
Exactly.
That's right. All right. Drs. Jonathan Schwartz and Mark Whaley, thank you both. See you next month. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening. Yeah.